This is Rosen Institute's Your Law Firm, where Lee Rosen and Ned Days cover management, marketing, finance, and new technologies for building the practice you deserve. Here's Lee Rosen.
It's good to be with you today from Nairobi, Kenya. We flew down here from Dubai and were hanging out for a few days before heading over to Masai Mara to visit the national park. Nairobi is pretty great. We've been wandering around and exploring. We found an absolutely fantastic restaurant that really ought to be on everybody's list of top places. It's absolutely delicious. We've been meeting lots of people. We had lunch the other day with a Rosen Institute member. That's always a lot of fun. And we're looking forward to a little less people watching and a little more animal watching once we get out into the national park. We'll take a quick flight out into the bush tomorrow.
It's time for your tech tip, 919-256-1558. That is my phone number. No masking services or forwarding numbers. That's it. You can text me and it will show up right next to the push notification about how I just spent $45 or whatever it is a burrito bowl costs these days at Chipotle. If you call that number, well, I likely won't pick up because number one, I'm a millennial, and number two, 99% of my calls are junk about extending my car's warranty. But you can leave a voicemail telling me that I have an overdue IRS debt that can only be paid with $500 worth of Apple or Best Buy gift cards, and I will be sure to get right back to you. Now, why on earth would I share that number and run the risk of angry podcast listeners sending me hate mail or unsolicited feet pictures? Well, I'm lonely and I like to chat, but I also know that almost nobody will take me up on it. In fact, there's a weird kind of phenomenon that happens where we can sometimes make ourselves so available, so easy to reach, that we put the minds of people who may otherwise be anxious about their ability to contact us at ease. You jump out ahead of concerns that you are hard to get a hold of or that someone is going to have to run the gauntlet of assistants or screeners or something else to actually get in touch with you in an emergency. Some practices accomplish this by meeting people where they are. If your clients want to message you on WhatsApp or Facebook or by text, chances are your potential clients want the same thing, and being easier to reach on those platforms will be a big plus, even if they don't ever use that option. Others just provide direct access via traditional methods. We always listed direct dial numbers and direct email addresses for all of our staff on the firm website. Lee has done this for years. We put his direct email and phone numbers in client communiques and marketing emails that went out to thousands of potential clients at a time. In fact, if you are subscribed to the Friday File at roseninstitute.com, they are down there in the bottom of every weekly email, and we often encourage people to reach out, to fuss at us, to tell us what we are doing that's great and what we're doing that is terrible. And despite what you might think would happen when you put your personal contact details out there in front of your audience, the number who do is embarrassingly small. Now, I chalk that up to our readers and listeners being the most polite and genteel audience one could ask for. But when we put up barriers and make it really obvious that we don't want people getting in touch with us, what usually happens is that reasonable, well-adjusted people, the kind we want as clients, take the hint and move on to somebody else. The, let's call them eccentrics, and those most likely to try our patients, work themselves up into a tizzy and take it as a personal challenge to become the squeaky wheels in our lives. Now, obviously, you are going to need to go about this in a way that makes sense for you, your practice, and your sanity. Giving people access also means you can demand a little more regarding courtesy. If they have your personal number or email or WhatsApp, it's not unreasonable to expect them to wait for a response if they message you at an uncivilized hour. But somewhere along the continuum from making yourself as unapproachable and unavailable as the Wizard of Oz to live streaming mukbang videos on the firm's YouTube channel, there is a zone of availability where you are so easy to reach that generally nobody needs to. Maybe I haven't convinced you to go all the way, but start experimenting if you have your contact methods locked down. Allow your clients a little more access to your team and see what happens, or rather, what doesn't happen. I'm Ned Days, and that's your tech tip.
And now for your moment of concise advice. Picture this. You're nestled in the slightly chilly, paper-cloaked embrace of a doctor's examination table, the kind of paper that crinkles with every twitch and every shift, broadcasting your restlessness as you sit there waiting. And through the thin partition, you catch snippets of a conversation between your doctor and a colleague. And instead of the expected medical jargon, what percolates through the wall is a stream of cold, hard business lingo. They're not discussing symptoms and treatments. They're analyzing leads. They're calculating the lifetime value of patients, and they're breaking down the revenue per surgery. Suddenly, you're not a patient. You're a profit center, a unit in a spreadsheet under the potential revenue column. That's a little bit unsettling, isn't it? Now, let's pivot to your realm, the legal world, where the power of words is really your bread and butter. Imagine the reverberations through your firm if, instead of clients, you start referring to individuals who are seeking legal help as leads. Consider the subtle yet profound shift in perception and mindset that causes inside your team. The term client, it conveys a relationship, a trust, a person with a story, and a need for your expertise, for help from the folks who work in your law firm. The word lead, however, it strips all of that away. It reduces a multifaceted individual down to a mere opportunity for profit. Using that sort of business language about your client, it causes a shift of thinking that is profound within the law firm. As the language permeates your firm's culture, it doesn't just stay within the walls of your office. It seeps out. It colors interactions with actual clients who, much like the patient eavesdropping in the doctor's office, they might catch a whiff of this transactional approach to clients. And just like that patient, the client in your firm, they'll feel devalued. They'll feel reduced to a figure on a balance sheet. This is about more than just hurt feelings. It's about the very foundation of trust and rapport that your law firm is built on. More than that, the shift in the language, it's a harbinger of a broader cultural shift within your law firm. We have deep roots in service and advocacy, but business language, it risks our noble pursuit being tainted by the same profit-first ethos that pervades more cutthroat industries. Your team members, the bright, idealistic minds who are often drawn to the law by a desire to make a difference, to champion the underdog, to help folks who need help, well, how do they function in that kind of culture? For many members of our team, that sort of language, it can be disheartening. It can be alienating. It can drive folks away, the very folks that you've hired because they are the lifeblood of your practice. Now, I'm all for treating your practice like a business. It is a business, and I spend a lot of energy helping lawyers understand business concepts, generating business and tracking business and turning business into revenue and growing profits. But words matter. Don't lose control of the language used in your business. These clients, just like your team members, they're listening to you. They're listening to the words that you use. These clients, the people whose lives and futures hang in the balance, how would they feel knowing that they're viewed not as individuals with rights and stories and dignity, but as entries in a database valued primarily for their economic yield? Look, this matters. The words we choose in a professional setting, they aren't just placeholders. They're potent symbols that shape perceptions and attitudes and behaviors. In our field, where trust and integrity and advocacy are everything, well, adopting the impersonal, transactional lexicon of pure business, it's a mistake. It's a fundamental misalignment with the ethos of our profession. Every single term that you use, every label that you apply, it weaves the fabric of your law firm's culture. You need to choose the words that lift people up, that honor the human element, that keep the noble heart of the law beating strong. Your employees are listening to you, and they will follow suit. And your clients, your real human clients, they will feel the difference. That's your moment of concise advice. Wrapping up from Nairobi, thanks for spending a few minutes with me and Ned today. We hope you have a great weekend and an even better week next week. Keep plugging away, moving forward, getting things done. You're on the right track. You'll get there, I promise. We're all in this together, and together we build better practices through better marketing, better management, and better technology. Until next time, I'm Lee Rosen.
Thanks for listening to Your Law Firm. Visit rosensrules.com for our free course on the 10 critical rules successful law firms follow.